Thank you, Ken. And just FYI, I will not be leading the member meeting next week. Jacqueline will be. I will be traveling. I am going to Maryland. I leave here on Thursday. I'm going to Maryland for a silent retreat. I think a few other people in Awakening Together are joining me there in Pamela Silberman's backyard for camping in silence. And on Sunday, I'll be traveling back Sunday evening. So Jacqueline Eckert will lead the member meeting next week. So the seven steps to awakening. Tonight, we are going to begin with quote number 768. And quote number 768 is the last of the Yoga Vasistha quotes in the third step, the seven steps to awakening. There are additional quotes in the third step, in step three, but this is the last of the quotes that comes from the Yoga Vasistha, or Vasistha. I think I've been told I mispronounce it. What I have done is I have given you all a link to my journal, to 768, and so if it interests you to follow along with me when I share from the journal, you can click on that. What I'm going to do is just start us off with a song, just for a little bit of transition time. This song has been a favorite of mine since I was around 20 years old. It's a bluegrass song by a bluegrass artist named Claire Lynch. And the name of the song is Your Presence is My Favorite Gift. Saying in a teaching recently, I don't know if it was here at the Seven Steps or if it was somewhere else, but I remember saying recently that nearly 100% of the time I practice awareness, watching awareness meditation right here, you know, on that purple sofa in my blue office. And that's so that I don't have any distractions, so that I can really focus. But this morning I did go out on the back porch before church. I do have a swing on my back porch, just like in that song. And this morning was one of those mornings when, the temperature wasn't too cool where I'd be distracted by being cold, or it wasn't too hot where I'd be distracted by being hot. And of course, the back porch is also a very safe place. So it just felt really good to go out this morning and sit in my swing and close my eyes and practice awareness, watching awareness. And then after that, I did that up until about, 10 after 8 my time, and church starts at 8:15. So at 8:15, I then went into church, and I enjoyed church on the back porch too. So so I was doing that, what that song talks about, being in the presence of truth on the back porch this morning. Yeah. Kathy says she calls that no temperature, like merging in with perfection of a perfect temperature. But yeah, it was really sweet to be out there. But when I practice awareness, watching awareness, a primary purpose in selecting where and when is minimal interruption, right? So, if it was too cold outside and, I might start getting too cold and therefore that would disturb me, I won't do it outside if that's the case. I'll just do it in here in my office where the temperature is always just right. So, as I mentioned, we are going to start with quote number 768, which is the last Yoga Vasishtha quote in step 3 of the 7 steps to awakening. So let me read that quote to you. For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self, in whom cravings have ceased, and ego sense is absent, life becomes non-volitional, and there is perfect purity. One in millions, however, is able to reach this unconditioned state of pure being. So, what comes up for me just in reading this is self-honesty again. I think self-honesty is really something that's wonderful to pause and look at from time to time. Because I do know that it's extremely common in spiritual circles, spiritual communities. I don't know exactly what word to use. Spiritual people among spiritual people. to play this game of how spiritual I am, right? Where we, lie for the sake of self-image. And we're not just lying to others, we're lying to ourselves too, right? It's not an outward focus lying only, it's also an inward focus lying. We lie to others and we lie to ourselves. About our spiritual state of mind. We want to perceive ourselves as if you'll pardon the expression, more perfected than we are. And I say pardon the expression because, of course, our true self is absolutely perfect already. But that's the ego perception, right? We want to present ourselves as more perfected than we are. Or, I always think of the ego as being kind of like either side of a balance beam. I remember when I was in junior high and, we took physical education, and for one, I think, 6-month period, we focused solely on gymnastics. And I remember my very, very favorite part of gymnastics, although, I was never an athletic kind of person, so I was never really good at anything. But my favorite kind of gymnastics was the balance beam. I loved the balance beam. And, I always think of the ego as being on either side of the balance beam. When I'm on the balance beam, I'm on the focused, honest, contemplative, spiritual path, right? I mean, my attention is there. And what and the ego doesn't really care which side I fall off the balance beam. The ego doesn't care if I fall to the left or the right, as long as I fall off the balance beam. Right? That, just get me off of that focused spiritual path. So, one way that the ego will help me to fall off the balance beam, will kind of push me, shove me in that direction, is the direction I just talked about, which is, you know, kind of presenting myself as more perfected than I am, more spiritually perfected than I am. You know, acting like I don't have attachments if I do, for example, or don't have desires when I do, those types of things. But the other way that the ego would be happy if I fell in the other direction is by overly judging myself for what I notice. So if I notice, for example, that my mind is really distracted by a particular desire and I'm really trying to figure out how I can get something, and I see that and I know it's a distraction, but what the ego will do is want me to really judge myself and tell myself what a terrible spiritual student I am and how I will never succeed, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think the ego really cares if I go on the over-presenting myself or the being over-hard on myself, as long as I get off of the balance beam. And at least I can express to you what feels genuinely right to me. In other words, what feels like staying on that balance beam, what feels like staying on that spiritual path, that focused spiritual path. And the best word I have for that is self-honesty. But let's say I'm distracted by something, some desire, and I know that I'm distracted by this desire, and I can feel how attached I am to this desire. Self-honesty would, A, be willing to admit that in conversation with a spiritual friend. I don't have to hide that, you know. B, I see it myself. I look at it myself. I recognize myself. I'm really distracted by this. I'm honest about it with myself. But C, I don't judge myself or beat myself up for it. And I might even, depending on the situation, I might even take the steps, make the choices to move myself away from the distraction. And the reason I say it depends on the situation is because I have to be really honest within myself, for lack of better words. You know, sometimes I wish I could communicate the feeling of what I'm communicating rather than the words, because the words can be misconstrued. I have to know what I'm ready for. You know, that's a part of being honest. I have to know what I'm ready for. There are some things, although right this moment I cannot think of a specific example. If I could, I would give one, and if one comes into the mind, I will share it, but it hasn't yet. But there are things I know I have watched myself, quote, fail at. And I don't mean failure with any judgment. I just mean that, you know, I would have an intention, you know. Well, okay, meditation. Let's take meditation. I had an intention to meditate for an hour on a daily basis for many months before that actually began to happen. So you could say I watched myself fail, and we'll take fail lightly here, right? I watched myself fail at that for months. Many months. I mean, you know, more than a year. Many months. So I had an intention to meditate for an hour every day. And sometimes I would go many days. I think sometimes even weeks during that period of time without sitting down and meditating at all. Yeah, Kathy says, or doing the lessons perfectly is another example. Exactly. So I watched myself fail without judging myself for the failure. But I watched myself, and let me see if I can express this in words. I watched myself with the awareness that I wanted to succeed. You know, like I'm watching myself fail with the awareness that I want to succeed, but no judgment. Just watching. Noticing, you could say noticing, that I wasn't doing it the way I wanted to do it, but not judging it. And I hope you guys can feel that. I hope you can feel that. Hopefully you felt that within yourself. And then what obviously happened after months of watching myself fail, knowing that I had a desire to succeed, is that at some point I began to just start sitting down every day and meditating. And now an hour for me is a short time. When I, on the days when it seems like I only have time to meditate for an hour, the hour feels like 15 minutes. It's like, wow, that was an hour already. You know, we're used to an hour was such a struggle. So the change occurred. It happened on its own, it seems like, just by watching myself fail, knowing that I wanted to succeed at that goal. I call that self-honesty. I call that self-honesty, and something just in watching in that way created the change. And again, it took many months, but I don't perceive that as a problem. I personally do not perceive that as a problem, that it took many months. I got there, right? So when I look at quote 768 and I read quote 768, what I see is the opportunity for that same kind of self-honesty. That self-honesty where we watch ourselves fail, remembering that we want to succeed, right? That's what I call honesty. So if we look at this, the first part of 768 says, "For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self." I'm just going to stop there. One who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self. Now, what that means to me is loving meditation. You know, loving meditation. Like, one thing I've always loved in this lifetime, I did not have to learn to love it, it was natural, was walking. I've always loved walking. In fact, when I look back over my life, you know, my life has gone through many, many, many phases. You know, when I was younger, you know, like teenage years and younger 20s, you know, I did a lot of partying, you know, drinking, some drugs along the way, quite a few drugs for a couple of years, you know, and then I had a young professional part of my life where I was just getting ahead, and then there was being the mother, and then the spiritual path came, and that was a focus. So you could see, you know, there were many different, you could call them phases of life. But one thing that was pretty consistent is almost on a daily basis, I've gone for walks. And I don't go for walks because I think I should. You know, I don't go for walks because, you know, that's a great way to stay healthy, even though it is. That's not why I go for walks. I go for walks because I love to go for walks. I always have. I've always loved to go for walks. So for me, again, when I was learning to meditate, I wanted to love meditation. I remember very clearly L.A. Ruzdar saying, "It cannot be a chore." Right? Meditation cannot be a chore. Well, my walks are not a chore. I mean, sometimes I need a little help breaking away from whatever else I'm doing in order to get out there, you know, because it seems like I'm really busy and don't have an hour to walk, so I need a little help getting away. But once I get out there, I always love it. I never wish I wasn't walking. I always, always love my walks. So I wanted meditation to be the same. I wanted to always love meditation like I always love walks. So that was a part of my goal, so that it wasn't a chore. Well, that's what the first part of 768 reminds me of. For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self. You know, meditates, closes the eyes, abides in awareness, remains as awareness, watches awareness because of the joy of watching awareness. And I do feel like I'm genuinely there now. When I sit down and I close my eyes, and now it only takes a minute or so, which again is another, you could say, sign of progress, because it used to take 20, 30 minutes before I would move into loving being aware of awareness, you know, like, but now it takes a minute or so. It doesn't take long at all, maybe 5 minutes on some days. And then I love just being there. But before that occurred, I watched myself fail at that for a very long time, knowing that's where I wanted to be, being aware that I wanted to love being aware. Right? It was a goal before it was a reality, before it was my genuine experience, right? So for one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self, and in the next part of the sentence, in whom cravings have ceased, in whom cravings have ceased. And what that means to me, cravings have ceased, that means that I am genuinely, perfectly happy with whatever is and whatever isn't. You know, genuinely, perfectly happy with whatever is and whatever isn't. It doesn't mean that the body doesn't work to accomplish goals. You know, for example, one of the things right now that I'm doing is not only doing the gentle healing homework along with you all, but writing that tip each day, right? And so that's kind of an additional focus that I have each day, is to write the tip of the day. And I do that, you know, for the most part. But, you know, there may come a time when something else, say, gets in the way of that, when I'm unable, for whatever reason, to write the tip for the day. I need to be just as happy then. If there's something bothering me, you know, because I wasn't able to write the tip of the day, if I feel like I failed you guys, or, you know, I'm not worthy, or whatever, well, then I'm not happy with whatever is and whatever isn't, right? And Kathy's asking, how long does that take me? It typically takes me 2 hours, because I have to read and contemplate the lesson. And yeah, it's a 2 hour a day thing. Yeah. Yeah, so happy with whatever is and whatever isn't. You know, that's what it means to me, in whom cravings have ceased. Again, it doesn't mean that we don't work to accomplish goals, like I work to accomplish the goal of writing a tip every day. It just means I'm happy working to accomplish that goal. I don't see it as a burden, and I'm happy if something happens and I'm not able to work to accomplish that goal one day. I'm just happy no matter what is. Right? And the last week it was kind of funny, because up until last Saturday, which was now, 8 days ago, I had no thought whatsoever about getting a new car. My boyfriend, I think you guys know, over the last few months was looking for a truck, and I was with him, you know, test driving different trucks and looking at different trucks. But it was all about him, you know, getting a truck. And last Saturday I mentioned to him that, you know, and in fact just recently I did like the 120,000 mile maintenance on my vehicle, which cost like $1,000, you know, so you can tell I had every intention of keeping that vehicle for a very long time, or I wouldn't have dropped $1,000 into it. And then last Saturday what happened was I just mentioned to him that, you know, my next vehicle, I'd really like it to be one that I could take off-road, because last Friday, Jasmine and I went to La Vida, and we were driving up this road to go check out something, and we got to a point in the road where my car wouldn't go any further. I couldn't go any further unless I had an off-road vehicle. And in fact, Jacqueline and I are going to a retreat in September, and I noticed in the directions to the retreat, it said, you know, you're going to need to have a four-wheel drive vehicle to get there. And I had that little thought in the back of my mind, huh, I wonder how we're going to get there. You know, like, huh. You know, so that was kind of there, although I wasn't paying much attention to it. And then last Friday, Jez and I were going somewhere, and we were unable to get there, you know, because that's just the way Colorado is, right? So on Saturday, I mentioned to Ron, thinking, you know, like next year or the year after, next time I get a car, because, you know, we all know there's going to be a someday. Next time when I get a car, I wanted like a four-wheel drive SUV. And I said something like maybe a Jeep Cherokee, you know, or something like that. And he started doing research, and he found out that the Jeep Cherokee is not very reliable. So he kept doing research, and came up with the idea that maybe a Toyota 4Runner would be a good next car for me. And then he started watching all of these videos. And in fact, he called me over to sit next to him to watch the videos. And the videos were very impressive as far as what the Toyota 4Runner can do off-road. And I don't remember how many days it was. Kathy says her husband would say the same thing, no Jeep Cherokee. Okay, there's our guidance, guys, no Jeep Cherokee. I don't remember how many days it was. It all kind of runs together in my mind. I think it was a couple of days. We were up in Colorado Springs, and we decided to stop at a car lot and just glance at a couple of Jeep Cherokees. A couple of Toyota 4Runners. I can't really, even though this is only a week-long story, I just can't remember how everything unfolded. It all kind of runs together. But I remember that we stopped and we looked at some, and they were so expensive. They just felt so out of reach for me. And so he thought that he would help me get one. And so I thought, okay, that's cool. You know, he's going to help me get one, and I'll get a Toyota 4Runner. So for a couple of days, I thought I was going to get a Toyota 4Runner. But then he came back and said that he actually purposefully, because he plans to retire in a couple years, right now he has like all of his money going into retirement accounts. And he doesn't really have a lot of cash laying around on hand. And so he thought he would get a loan in order to get this car for me. But when he checked into it, he realized that if he got the loan, it would have to be his car. You can't get a loan to buy somebody else a car because there's no collateral. And so it's like, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I can't do that. And I was like, well, okay, you know, I'm not getting a Toyota 4Runner. And so there was a day or two that I went along thinking I'm not getting one. And then Francine and I went back to La Vida, and again, we had to do some off-roading. And my car just wouldn't do it. And in fact, my car started making some very funny noises where I thought maybe because I took it off-road when it really wasn't supposed to go off-road that I had broken it. And so I thought, wow, maybe this is a sign I should get a Toyota 4Runner. Well, just to let you guys know, yesterday I bought a Toyota 4Runner. But the reason I'm telling you this story, this all happened in a week. And the reason I'm telling you this story is that I noticed there was like this on-again, off-again kind of thing. Maybe I will, maybe I won't, as this week was happening. And I kept noticing that every time it changed, I actually felt the same. Like the story was changing back and forth and back and forth. And in fact, even yesterday morning when we left the house pretty certain that we were going to buy a Toyota 4Runner. And by the way, I ended up buying it myself. So by the time that yesterday happened and we were going out to buy a Toyota 4Runner and we're going to look at one, Ron looks over at me and he says, you know, are you excited? And I'm like, you know, this just feels like what we're doing today. And that's exactly how it felt. This just feels like what we're doing today. And I'll tell you all a little something else, which may seem a little off topic, but I don't think it is. Slightly off the topic of this quote, but it's not off the topic of spirituality. We were going to look first at a specific Toyota 4Runner, which was like the best deal, according to cargurus.com, the best deal within 150 miles of where I live. And when we got there, the salesman brought it out, and, you know, I couldn't look at it and see anything wrong with it. I mean, it looked fine, but there was just this feeling of no. And I remember thinking, oh, but it's the best deal, you know. I mean, what, you know, I'm not the richest person on the planet. There's nothing wrong with this car. You know, I should buy it just because it's the best deal. But this feeling of no just hung there. And as it turns out, and we didn't find this out for a little bit longer, but as it turns out, somebody else had already put down a deposit on that particular SUV, and it really wasn't available. The salesman just wasn't aware of that. So we didn't get that one. And so then we went to look at another one, which was supposed to be the best equipped one in the area. The very best equipped, had all of the options and all that, and the price was fairly decent. And again, there was just this no, like just no, no. And so, you know, we walked away from that car. And then we came to another dealer that had two cars, a silver one and a black one. And the black one had just been dropped off that day, so it wasn't clean yet or anything. I'm all looking at used. There's no way I could afford a new one. They're way out of my reach. the black one had just been dropped off. It hadn't been cleaned or anything. So they were offering it, they told us, at a lower price. And the silver one was at a higher price. But the black one had, again, more options. It was the premium edition. And it was a year younger and had like 10 or 15,000 less miles, and it was cheaper. So really, you know, like on paper, if you wrote it all down, it looked like the better deal. But when I drove the black one, which was the better deal, there was just this, you know, there's nothing wrong with this car, but just no. And when I drove the silver one, which was supposedly not the better deal, it felt like my car. It just felt natural. It just felt natural. Well, as it turned out, you know, the salesman had made a mistake, and actually the black one was more expensive. The silver one was cheaper. And by the time we got done with a very simple negotiation, it wasn't even a hard negotiation, I ended up getting that car cheaper than the one we originally left to buy, which was supposed to be the best deal within 150 miles. But the point of my story is the intuition knew the answer all the way. I didn't need to think at all. The intuition knew no on the first car, no on the second car, no on the third car, yes on the fourth. Even though, you know, we didn't know yet that that fourth car was going to be the least expensive car, right? It didn't look that way in the beginning. And it was very tempting to not pay attention to the intuition, because the details that were being shared with me were saying, but this one has more options, this one costs less, blah, 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 blah. And yet the intuition was right there. And Ron felt the intuition too. I wasn't the only one. It was kind of like disappointing that the black one was the better deal, because the intuition was going with the silver one, right? So I just want to say that to you all, because, you know, I want you to be aware that this intuition, it will guide us in every single thing we are to do. Every single thing we are to do. It's just a matter of being very tuned in, and maybe we are back to the quote, and letting go of your own cravings, your own desired outcomes, your own, you know, like if you were thinking, oh, but I want the premium edition, you know, with all the bells and whistles, you might ignore that little feeling that's saying, you know, no, right? No. This one over here. Get this one over here. So, but Ron and I both felt the intuition. We both had a discussion at the end of the day about how it really knew which car to buy, and it really knew when to say no, and that, you know, we didn't have to really be looking at all the details. We just had to follow the intuition. So back to the quote. For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self. And then, for one in whom cravings have ceased, right? For one in whom cravings have ceased. So maybe these cravings haven't ceased. Maybe we look at this and we say, but you know what? It's not the same for me. If one day I'm getting a car and the next day I'm not, and then the next day I am, and then the next day I'm not, that drives me crazy. I am not like, okay, you know, I'm going crazy. You know, why isn't this, right? We just watch that. We just realize that, you know, again, if you can say it without judgment, I'm failing at not having a purpose here, or a strong preference, or there's a thing called here, a craving. I'm failing at not wanting things to be a certain way. We can say it that way. But I'm aware of my desire to be happy no matter what. And just watch it. To me, that's self-honesty. Right? Don't lie to ourselves about it. Don't pretend like we're okay with it if we're not. Just watch it. For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self, in whom cravings have ceased, and ego sense is absent. Now, ego sense is the sense of me. And one thing that I would say about the ego sense, and I know I've said this before, so it's not new news, is that the ego sense is really very selfish. Not necessarily the type of selfishness that the world would call selfishness. It's a more subtle type of selfishness. It's self-centeredness. It's seeing everything from my point of view, thinking that I am right. Right? Even if I'm thinking what you think about me, I think I'm right about what I think you're thinking. Right? I mean, it's just very selfish in that I'm the center of the world, and my point of view is the most right point of view in the world, right? And it doesn't think about the whole. I mean, I, the ego sense, am absolutely willing to give my money, but, you know, I need something back from that. Like, I need people to know I gave the money, or, you know, something. Or it has to be a tax write-off, or, you know, I need lots and lots of appreciation showered my way. You know, they have to name a wing of the hospital after me, you know, right? I need something in return, because the ego just doesn't, it's all about me. It doesn't think of the whole. It doesn't think of others as equal to it, or as the same as it, or as important as it. Yeah, notice my presence. Yeah. So that's what I mean by selfish. Right? Even if it's generous, it's generous in a selfish way. So, again, if I notice the ego sense in me, I notice that me perspective, you could say I watch it, noticing that I'm failing at not being egocentric, right? And realizing I want to succeed at just being completely egoless. I watch it, noticing I'm failing and that I want to succeed, and I just watch it without the judgment. But the watching it is really important, you know, both, you know, watching that I think meditation is a chore, watching that I have cravings or that I want specific outcomes, I want things to go a certain way, watching that I have this very selfish ego sense. Watching it is very, very important, because if we don't watch it, it's in control through our lack of watching. So, if I don't watch it, it runs me. When I watch it with the awareness that I want it to be different, for example, you know, with the awareness that I want to be happy with whatever is and whatever isn't, right? With the awareness that I want to naturally think of the whole. It's something the ego can't do. The ego can't think of the whole. It's only through the egoless sense that we can think of the whole, right? So I want to naturally think of the whole instead of thinking about myself, right? When I watch with that awareness, the thing that I don't want, like being attached to outcomes or seeing meditation as a chore or being, you know, ego selfish, selfishness, it begins to weaken through my watching. So if I don't watch it, it controls me. If I watch it, it begins to weaken. And again, it may take many months. It may take many years before it really has weakened to the sense that it doesn't even appear to be there anymore. But that's okay. You know, we need that patience. We need to know that something is happening through our watching. So if I see today that I am really still, you know, very egocentric, I'm still thinking of me all the time. I still think everybody else should think like I do. I still think things should happen the way I think they should happen. I still think I'm more right than other people. I watch it, realizing that I really want to be egoless. Naturally egoless. And that's self-honesty. So for one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self, in whom cravings have ceased and ego sense is absent, life becomes non-volitional. Now, non-volitional means that beingness and actions just happen without a me deciding how things should be. Things just happen. And sure, you know, you could say, like, if you could say, well, I saw Regina, you know, do such and such. I mean, I watched her sit down and plan how much money she could put down on the car and how much of a loan she would need to take. And I watched her and Jasmine go and clean the CRV so that it would look really nice as a trade-in. So I know that, you know, that she had personal will in this. I know she did. But actually, all of that can happen without a personal will. You know, and it's very difficult to explain. But, you know, even this talking that is occurring right now, it happens without a personal will. It just happens. You know, what I do is show up with the intention to let it happen and with the intention to listen as it happens. And that's the end of it. The rest of it just happens. So there's no personal will, like, you know, an example of a personal will might be wanting people to think that I am brilliant or wise, or wanting Awakening Together to grow, or wanting Regina Dawn Akers to become the next famous teacher, or wanting lots and lots of donations, or, you know, that's an example of personal will. But just being there and letting the doingness happen through you without seeking anything from it, there's no volition there. There's no personal will there. And so if we notice ourselves having a personal will, like we know, hey, I really, really want... I really want a lot of people to donate to the retreat house. In fact, you know, I can't stand it that they're not donating to the retreat house more, right? If I notice that, then I see that failure, again, take the word lightly, and realize that I want to have no personal will. I want to just let everything be as it is. And I just watch it. I don't deny it. I don't lie about it. I just watch it. And again, if we watch something, if we watch our personal will, whatever our personal will may be, if we watch our personal will with the realization that we want it to be different, you know, I want to have no will. I want to just be free for the universe to come through me, and I'm happy no matter what. It may take weeks or months or years. But that will come into being. This is the power of self-honesty. This is the power of watching and the power of knowing what we truly want. For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self, in whom cravings have ceased and ego sense is absent, life becomes non-volitional and there is perfect purity. Now this ends with, one in millions, however, is able to reach this unconditioned state of pure being. But we just talked about how to reach that unconditioned state of pure being. We know the secret. And we can see that most people, A, don't know the secret. And even of those who do know the secret, right, a lot of people, maybe even still most, but I don't know that for a fact, don't follow it. In other words, they allow the ego to knock them off the balance beam on one side or the other. Again, one side of being knocked off the balance beam is lying to themselves and others about how spiritually advanced they are. Pretending to have no volition when there is still volition present. Pretending to have no ego when there is still ego present. Pretending to have no cravings when there are still cravings, desired outcomes present. Pretending to engage in spiritual practice when actually it gets missed a whole lot more than it gets engaged in, right? Lying to ourselves and others. And again, the other way that the ego knocks us off of the balance beam is, again, not by lying. I mean, we see how we're, failing, but we judge the heck out of ourselves for it. We say we'll never be good enough, blah, 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 the beating ourselves down. The secret, obviously, is to stay on the balance beam. Self-honesty. See where I am failing, and we got to take the word failing lightly, but see where I am failing to live or be as I intend to be. Remember my desire to live or be as I intend to be. And that's the secret. And if we just pause for a moment, because I think a lot of people don't succeed at the secret, so they fail at the secret. So let's say that we fail at the secret, which means that either I am lying about how spiritually advanced I am to myself and others, or I'm beating myself up, judging myself because of how not advanced I am, I can begin watching right there. I can watch myself pretend to be more spiritually advanced than I want to be and realize I'd rather be more honest than that. You see, that's where the secret starts. Or I can watch myself tell myself what a lousy spiritual student I am, how I'll never be good enough, and realize that I want to let go of judging myself. The secret can start there. So you don't have to already be on the balance beam to practice the secret. You can be knocked off. You can be laying on your butt on one side of the balance beam or the other and start practicing the secret. And again, if you really practice that well, every time you see yourself faking it, for example, pretending to be more spiritually advanced than you are, you watch it, realize what you're doing, realize you don't want to do that, whether it's weeks or months, hopefully not years in that case. I think that could be taken care of earlier, but maybe years. whether it's weeks or months or years of watching with that self-honest position, that will begin to die in you. Because you're so aware of what you want. You're aware that you want self-honesty and you're paying attention to that awareness. Or if you're on the other side of the balance beam, you're very aware that you do not want to judge yourself. You're aware that you don't want to, and you're just so aware of that that the judgment just begins to die. Now, this is what came to me today as I read quote 768. I saw the opportunity for what I am calling self-honesty. What I don't know is when I read this quote and contemplated it a few years ago, what I saw. So why don't we take the last 9 minutes to go and look at that. So first, let me read the quote again. For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self, in whom cravings have ceased and ego sense is absent, life becomes non-volitional and there is perfect purity. One in millions, however, is able to reach this unconditioned state of pure being. For one who rests in his own self and rejoices in the self, in whom cravings have ceased and ego sense is absent, life becomes non-volitional and there is perfect purity. One in millions, however, is able to reach this unconditioned state of pure being. So let's go see what I wrote in the journal. Looks like this was January 2nd, 2014. I wrote, as long as I think I decide, even if I think I am deciding to choose the right mind, to follow intuition, or to be the watcher, there is still identification with mind. And the reason for that is the I, right? As long as I think I decide, as long as I think I decide, even if I think I am deciding to choose the right mind, to follow intuition, or to be the watcher, there is still identification with mind. And this, again, whenever I read things like this, I want to say this doesn't imply guilt. Right? This doesn't say, as long as I think I'm deciding to choose the right mind, or I'm deciding to follow intuition, or I'm deciding to be the watcher, then I'm guilty. It just says there's still identification with the mind. Do you know what this is? This is the secret. This is the watching. This is the noticing that I still think there's a me here. And realizing that I want to know myself as the know me. That's what this is. It's an actual demonstration of the secret. It's not pretending, you know, it's not pretending to myself or others, oh, you know, I don't ever think there's a me here. You know, it's not pretending. And it's not beating myself up. Oh, my God, what's wrong with me? I've been on this spiritual path for 13 years now, and I still think there's a me. I'm such a failure. I'm never going to get it. It's just noticing. It's watching. It's staying on the balance beam. And if you pay close attention, you will find there are times when it's hard to stay on the balance beam. In fact, there are times when there's not just the temptation to fall on one side or the other, but you'll even feel yourself wobbling. It's like, you know, either fall on the side of faking it, lying to yourself, denying, or fall on the side of judging. But for, no matter what you do, please do not stay on the balance beam, right? That's the ego. And so you'll feel wobbling, like you'll feel that temptation in you to either lie or feel guilty, deny or feel unworthy. You can kind of feel the wobbling happening. and you just want to watch it. Watch it and realize that you want to transcend both of those temptations. That's the secret. Watch the failure and remember the goal, or remember what you really want. So that's it. My words have ended, and you see how that happens? If I felt like I have to finish this last 4 minutes with words, I have to think of something else to say here, I'd be falling off the balance beam. The words have stopped, and so I stop. But I don't mind filling the time with a song. So, here's a good song. I've played this with you before, but I played a different singer. This is a singer named Linda Eder, and it's the song The Impossible Dream, because sometimes, you know, it does feel impossible to get to where we, you know, are the one who rests in the self, rejoices in the self, whom all cravings have ceased, and the ego sense is absent, and there is no volition, right? It feels like the impossible dream. So I love this song because it's to continue reaching for the goal. That's what it implies. Just keep reaching for that goal. So here we go. I think you're going to be listening to me, though, for another hour, and then I'll be back the hour after that. So it's Regina Don Acres not here at Awakening Together.